The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, my name is Adam Fields with the Midnight27Studios.com, creator of the Prowl comic book series. You are listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 187. And I assure you there will be no gangster rappers on this episode, which I thought was going to sound a lot funnier. When I said it in my head, it was like, hey, gangster rap joke 187, the episode number, ha 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 ha. I don't know, I guess I fell flat. But hey, man. Nonetheless, I hope you're doing well, and thanks for checking out this episode. And my guest on this episode is Mr. Sean Forney. Sean is the creator of the Scarlet Huntress comic book series. It's a self-published comic, and Sean will tell you that she's been around for about 15 years. It's a great kind of fantasy book, and he's an Ohio guy. He's right up here in Delaware, Ohio, and I discovered him while checking out some Kickstarter campaigns, and I said, hey man, I'm going to email him, and he was happy to come aboard here because he's got a new project up on Kickstarter called The Scarlet Huntress Adventures, and it's fully funded. That's right. He put it up on a Thursday. By Monday, in 4 days, it was fully funded. And so I know you're probably listening at home going, whoop-de-doo, John, who cares? Well, you know what? You could still donate, and you can help Sean and his creative team unlock some really cool stretch goals, and he's going to talk all about that on the episode, what some of those really interesting stretch goals are. The Kickstarter itself ends on April 29th. So if you're interested, go to Kickstarter.com and search for Scarlet Huntress Adventures, or you could just go to Kickstarter.com and search for Sean Forney, S-E-A-N-F-O-R-N-E-Y. And like I said, just because it's fully funded, you can still donate. You can still become part of this project and unlock some amazing stretch goals. So I was really excited to have him on. And, before we get to that conversation, I think I'd like to let you know about a couple of other things here real quick. First off, I would like to plug that this Saturday, March 30th, Old Wrestling is back in action. And, I've talked about it many times on this podcast. I'm a huge fan of Old Wrestling. Marion Fontaine and all the guys and gals involved with Old Wrestling put on quite a unique show. If you've never seen it before, you need to go. You need to check it out. But they're making their debut in Detroit, Michigan this Saturday, March 30th. They're going to be at the Detroit City Distillery Whiskey Factory. That's downtown Detroit, 1000 Maple Street. Things kick off at 7 p.m. If you need more information, all you got to do is go over to oldwrestling.com. That's oldwrestling.com, and you can get all the details. Another big wrestling show that I'd like to mention is that my friends at Ohio Championship Wrestling are back in action on April 20th for Tradition 16. It's going to emanate from the Chaparral's Community Center in Akron, Ohio. 7 o'clock is the bell time, and they just announced, I believe, this past weekend, maybe it was at the beginning of the week, but they announced the main event, and it is Robbie Superstar taking on No Shame Jimmy Shane for the OCW heavyweight title inside of a cage. And I'm telling you right now, I mean, this has been a very long time in the making. I mean, Starr and Shane have been friends, they've been partners, they've been bitter enemies, and it all culminates in this steel cage match for Jimmy's OCW heavyweight championship. If you need more information, all you got to do is go to OCWrestling.net or check them out on Facebook just by searching for Ohio Championship Wrestling. Hey, I want to give some love to a great sponsor of the PVD Cast before we kick it on over to my conversation with Sean. This episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They are located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have tons of comics, they have graphic novels, they have toys, comic book supplies, and various collectibles. And I'm just going to let you know, I talked to Jeff just a couple weeks ago. There are big things in store for World's Greatest Comics. I don't know if I can talk about them, but the best way to find out is just to go over to the store itself. Again, it's at 5992 Westerville Road, or you can follow all the happenings online. WGComics.com is their website, or they're also on Facebook, facebook.com/WGComics. I want to thank them for being a great sponsor. And again, folks, if you stop in the store or if you order something online, let them know that you heard about their awesome store from yours truly, John Orlando, and the PVD cast. All right, with that little bit of business out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'm going to be joined by Mr. Sean Forney talking about his book, Scarlet Huntress. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down this evening with Mr. Sean Forney. Sean, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. You're fresh back from C2E2 in Chicago, correct?
Yep.
And how was C2E2 this year?
It was fantastic. They actually had a sellout crowd on Saturday. First time in their history. They had an estimate of like 90,000 people come into the place. And Friday and Saturday were both in the like, or excuse me, Friday and Sunday were both in the like 80 to 85% sellout range. So the place was just jam packed with people all weekend long, and everybody that was there, you know, they were coming through Artist Alley and they actually wanted to check out Artist Alley, check out comic books and all that stuff. So it was a really good show.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let me fill in the listeners a little bit that you are the creator of Scarlet Huntress, a series that you self-publish. But you've got lots of projects going on. You've been involved with projects for Marvel Premier Sketch Cards, Lord of Gore, which is from Devil's Due, Black Flame. I mean, you have a lot of stuff out there, and we'll talk all about those. But I think probably the most pressing thing to talk about right now is you have a Kickstarter going on, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, we launched a Kickstarter Thursday afternoon for a new issue of Scarlet Huntress. And as of about maybe an hour ago, maybe a little less, we just found out we're funded. So we just started working on trying to kick in those stretch goals.
Wow, that's amazing. Because you guys, what, you said Thursday you launched it, right?
Yeah. We were on the ride to Chicago for C2E2. We launched it, and it went really well over the weekend. Everybody's been great about, you know, supporting it, pledging, sharing it, and all that. And yeah, about an hour ago or so, we saw that, you know, we got the email pop up and say you're funded, and so, you know, we're trying to get the word out on it.
Well, that's excellent, man. What's some of the perks or rewards, and even let's talk about those stretch goals if you can, so maybe we can get a little more cash in the pocket of yours truly, or of your project there. Not me. I'm not making any money on this. Anyways, talk about a little bit on some of those perks, those rewards, those stretch goals and whatnot.
So we've got, as far as the perks go, we're doing three artists that are coming in to do some exclusive variant covers. Daryl Banks, Marat Michaels, and Carla Wasgala, also known as Carlations. They are each providing some artwork for exclusive variant cover that we're going to do one version where there's going to only be 100 of them printed for the Kickstarter. And then we have a variant of the variant. In the case of Daryl's cover, it's going to be a version cover. It's just going to be the artwork on the cover of the book. No trade dress, nothing like that. So you can just admire the artwork by Daryl. Marat Michaels, we're going to take his cover and have it printed on a chrome holofoil cover. Those things have been making a crazy comeback here lately. And we're gonna do that with his, and then with Carla's, we're gonna do it on a pearl stock, so it'll have a pearlescent look. It'll kind of like have this like shiny undertone underneath the ink. So we'll have as far as those go, there'll be like 25 of each of those available. And the stretch goals, we've got all sorts of stuff. We've got stickers. We've got prints by additional artists like Nate Lovett, Jalen Warner, Jay Fife, Chad Heinrich. We're going to do some bookmarks, hopefully a set of trading cards. The very first package that will be available as a stretch goal is people will be able to get digital copies through Drive-Thru Comics of all of the previous released Scarlet Hunter stuff. Right now, all the packages have basically issue 1, 2, 3 available as a digital version, but we're going to actually add in some other books that we released that tie into the Scarlet Huntress universe. We've got an art book. Because Scarlet is a descendant of Little Red Riding Hood, we did a version of the Little Red Riding Hood fairy tale that fits within our mythology. So people will actually be able to read that as a digital version. And since Scarlet not only fights werewolves, she comes across other cryptids like Bigfoot, Gremlin, Mothman, things like that. We released a book called Scarlet's Field Guide to Cryptids, and it's her like personal journal of all the various creatures she's come across in her travels and whatnot. So that first stretch goal is to get everybody digital versions of those books that they'll come in every package once we hit that stretch goal.
Wow, that's cool. So you kind of get the entire universe, so to speak, if you can hit that stretch goal, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the current issue, though, because I think we've kind of not really given the listeners a full feel for what's involved in that issue of Scarlet Hunter's Adventures. You have three short stories that are compiled into that. So you want to talk about maybe a brief summary of those tales?
Yeah, so we've got one that's Scarlet Goes to Comic-Con, and it spins out of the piece of art that I created for the Greater Columbus Convention Center, if I could talk, geez. A couple years ago, I got asked to contribute a piece of artwork that's part of the Convention Center's permanent collection, and I made a story of Scarlet walking into the Convention Center for Comic-Con. And the piece at the Convention Center is just kind of open-ended. You don't really know why she's going there, what's happening. So we're going to continue that in this new book. And Scarlet's going in because she's heard all these rumblings of a werewolf in Comic-Con. And she's going to go in and find out what's going on. And I've thrown a lot of Easter eggs and surprises in there, trying to hide stuff in the background of what actually happens in a Comic-Con. Taking a lot of personal stuff over the last like 15 years or so that we've been doing conventions and kind of sneaking a bit of that stuff in there. And then we have Scarlet versus Gremlins as another story where Scarlet is going to think that there's something going on that involves a werewolf at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And when she gets there, she comes to find out it's not a werewolf or not werewolves, it's gremlins. And so it's a fun little story of her trying to capture these gremlins and get out of there before, you know, somebody on the base notices anything's going on. And then the last story we have in there continues off the like main Scarlet Huntress story that we've had going since we started the book back in 2003. It's going to pick up from what we did in one of the stories in Tales Through Time, the previous issue. And it's Scarlet and the Secret Amulet. And in that, Scarlet is going to, she's still tracking down the main villain of the story, Vincent. In the last story, she found a dagger and a note from him. And she's trying to figure out how this connects to the this like recent string of like break-ins and such. And she comes across this artifact that happens to be an amulet. And we're going to kind of explore how this is all connected to her mother dying and, you know, continuing out her main story arc.
Well, there you go. Great book, folks. If you want to get your hands on, definitely go over to Kickstarter.com and just look for Scarlet Huntress Adventures, I presume?
Yep. If you search that or, you know, search my name, either way, it'll pop up. If you follow me on any of social media, we've been posting links left and right to try to get the word out. So many, many ways to find.
Gotcha. Well, can I talk real quick, or can you talk real quick about the team that's behind this book? Because you have some very talented artists, and I think you've mentioned them, you know, Jalen Warner, Jay Fife, Jamie Snell, and your wife is also involved in the project, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So my wife, Stephanie, and I, We created the character back in like late 2003, and she has been writing all the stories since the beginning. We developed character together. We've both kind of tag teamed on the art and a lot of the issues. She has done everything from writing to lettering to inking, flatting. We basically tackle all the stuff. As far as the interiors go, it's mainly the two of us tackling all that stuff. But like you mentioned, we've got a bunch of guest artists coming in for, like I'd already mentioned, we've got Daryl Banks, Marat Michaels, and Carlation's doing some variant covers for us. But we've also got guys like Jamie Snell, Jalen Warner, Nate Lovett, Chad Heinrich, Jay Fife. They've all been gracious enough to do some artwork for us based on Scarlet or Werewolves or a few other surprise things that we're going to do for a collection of prints that'll be available on the Kickstarter. Right now, before we reach any stretch goals, like anybody that backs at certain levels, they get 6 to 7 different prints. And if we start hitting some of these stretch goals, we've got at least 3 or 4 more prints that we're going to add into all the packages. So anybody that backs at, like, I believe it's the $10 level, everybody will get all these additional pieces of artwork from all these great artists that are helping us out.
I guess I'm going to ask the question that maybe many of the listeners are thinking in their heads. How is it to work with your wife? Does it cause any type of turmoil or anything? Or do you guys, are you guys such a well-oiled machine, it doesn't matter?
I'm getting a chuckle from the other room, so I'm gonna say there's probably a little bit of both. I put that in, especially like doing this stuff and with like making the trip to C2E2 over the weekend. There's those times of getting frustrated and trying to work out whatever's going on with the project or the trip or what's going on at the convention. But we've been doing this for like the last 15 years of producing this, and as well as all the rest of the projects like you mentioned early on. There's a lot of times where it's both of us involved in that kind of thing too. So we have a great relationship where we can sit down and knock projects out and get things done. And we try our best to make it through all the trials, tribulations that might pop up because, tight deadlines or things of that nature.
Gotcha. Well, you've mentioned that Scarlet Huntress, your main title, goes back 15 years. What was the inspiration for the character?
It was basically some quick phone conversations we had because I was working with a publisher doing some artwork for trading cards at the time. And that publisher was getting ready to release an anthology book called The Portal. And the editor emailed me and asked me if I'd like to contribute a piece to this anthology, if I'd like to do a short story of X amount of pages. At the time, Steph and I were just dating, and I actually lived in Toledo area. She was down here in Columbus area. So I called her up and I said, "Hey, I've got this opportunity. Will you help me come up with a story? What can we do?" And I can't say specifically where the idea of, taking the idea of a modern day descendant of Little Red Riding Hood, that where that exactly popped up from. But that's what we settled upon, and we sat there and we came up with a story over, a couple of emails and some phone calls. We did this 5-page short story that was released in this anthology, and it was the first comic book that I actually had to sit on my table at the very first convention I went to. And the publisher really dug it, and there was quite a few folks that had picked up the book that asked for some more. So we did another short story where we actually had a crossover between Scarlet and the publisher's character, and writer Chad Lambert did this short little like 5-page story or whatnot. And after that, the publisher gave us the opportunity to do a one-shot story with the character, and we could do one self-contained story of however many pages we felt were necessary, and they would release it. So we did that. We created the art. We did the story. We got it ready to publish, and the publisher had some stuff going on that prevented them from being able to print the book when we were ready to print it. We were getting ready for, whatever the next convention was that was coming up, and we really wanted to have it. So we ended up kind of taking the reins of our book and we jumped into the whole idea of self-publishing, and you know, it was, you know, at least the first issue that we had the first issue for the first time, once we had moved, we were both living in the Columbus area, and it was our first, Mid-OhioCon back in, 2006 was when we had the, actual first full issue of the character in our own book. And, then we've just taken all that and just kind of ran with it since.
And you've talked about that there's been a lot of other books that Scarlet has appeared in, as you mentioned, the Field Guide to Cryptids and the Tales Through Time and the even the Origins of a Huntress, the Little Red Riding Hood. Is there, with the Little Red Riding Hood book, was there a challenge of presenting Scarlet in a more, I don't know the correct adjective, maybe in a more juvenile or childlike manner than the other particular books that she's been in?
It was and it wasn't.
Okay.
Our challenge was like trying to develop the story so it fit within our universe. And then Steph actually did that entire issue pretty much on her own. She wrote the story. Myself and then our friend Jalen Warner, we kind of like brainstormed the whole thing to try to get some ideas of, you know, how we could get it to tie in, making, some kind of like some editorial stuff of like trying to come up with what the supporting cast were going to be and what they should look like and whatnot. And, like I said, she ran with it with coming up with the art style. She did all the pages in, charcoal. And did it, we wanted the look of a classic children's book, you know, like the little golden mm-hmm. books, you know, that little square format. So, you know, she did everything in that format to fit the look that we wanted. And then, we took, all the charcoal drawings, and, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? We compiled them to, you know, make the final book and, you know, added in the text and gave it a little bit of that, again, that old children's book look and tried to add that flair. But we also kind of tried to work in a little bit of the look from like the old illuminated manuscripts with getting the very decorative lettering and things like that. Just to, you know, really play up that idea of like the kid's fairy tale, you know, give it that whole package of, you know, here, we want you to think this is a cute, friendly kids book, but in turn it's, you know, this story of Little Red Riding Hood coming up against a werewolf and you know, battling the werewolf at the end of the book and then, you know, leading on to everything else that comes down as the lineage progresses down to our current version of Scarlet.
So she's been around for 15 years. Will she always be around?
I'd obviously like to see that happen. I'd like to see, you know, hopefully this Kickstarter is successful enough that we can take some time and do some future issues much sooner than we have in the past, because most all the books, it's been an average of about 5 years between each issue, because we, you know, we both have to fit the work in between other stuff that we do. And, you know, for me, it's fitting it in between freelance projects. For her, it's between fitting it in between her schedule as being a teacher. So, you know, if the Kickstarter does well enough and hopefully allows us a little bit more time, that, you know, we can produce maybe a couple more issues much quicker, get them out there, and, you know, hopefully people enjoy it enough to let us continue telling that story.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about a couple of the other projects that you are working on.
Okay.
You are currently working as a colorist for the book Lark's Killer, which is done by Bill Willingham of Fables fame. So what's it like working with Bill, or do you have a lot of interaction with him or not? How did that particular project come about?
Well, I got to preface this with right now, the project is a little unknown on my end. There's been some hiatus that happened. I can't tell you rhyme or reason why. But I can tell you like how the project came about, and
sure,
at least my working on it up to this point. I was actually at San Diego Comic-Con, not last summer, but the summer before, and day of Comic-Con had wrapped up. I'm back in the hotel room, and my phone goes off with an email from a fellow creator, and he emailed me and asked me if I'd be interested in working with Bill Willingham on his new project. And so I emailed him back and I said, yeah, I'd absolutely love the opportunity. And he relayed my email to Bill and to his editor. And they contacted me and we spoke through email and said that we would talk once Comic-Con was over. But I also had the opportunity, since I was there at Comic-Con and they were there as well with the publisher, I was able to take a short little break from Artist Alley, make my way over, meet with the publisher, meet with Bill and talk about the project a little bit, find out what was going on with the project, what they wanted to do, how they wanted to move forward and so on. And, yeah, I got back home on like Monday and, had some emails in my inbox ready to go with some pages. And I jumped on board with issue 3 of the book. And, so far up to this point, I believe we did, up to issue 10, maybe 11. I can't recall exactly. But throughout the process, you know, I had several opportunities where I chatted with Bill to get, you know, feedback or whatnot, just to make sure that I was, you know, one, meeting his expectations, but two, trying to get a firm grasp of, you know, what he envisioned for the book. Because the first issue I got to work on issue 3, Bill himself actually drew that issue. So it was not only him writing it, but he was drawing. So I got to work directly with him on, you know, coming up with the look that he wanted for that particular issue. And we also had the opportunity to do a couple covers that way. And then from there, I worked with a couple different artists that traded off and on at like every other issue. So we could kind of keep it on schedule. And, for the time that I was working on it and whatnot, I had a very good experience, with the artists and stuff that I worked with. And, I thought the story was a fun story. I was curious to see where it was going. So hopefully at some point I'll see it continued and, you know, hopefully see what the resolution of the story is here somewhere down the road.
Yeah, that's unfortunate that got put on hiatus there. That's that sucks. But, again, hopefully it'll get back on track, so to speak. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Sean Forney for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, and even collectibles. If you want to make sure that you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pool system, and you'll get a 20% off pre-ordered comics deal. So check them out online at wgcomics.com or jump on over to the store located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and let them know that you heard it from me, John Orlando, and the PVD cast. You also are doing a book called Lord of Gore from Devil's Due. Can you maybe give the listeners a little summary of what that book's all about and your part in the project?
Yeah, so I colored issues 1 through 3. It was a 5-issue miniseries. I don't remember who finished up the last 2 issues, but I was working with D.B. Stanley and Dan Leischer. They developed the plot of the story and whatnot of kind of like the classic 80s slasher flicks is the best way I can equate it to anything. They have this main villain. People are getting murdered. Everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. You know, some of the typical horror movie cliches come up, you know, with, you know, people doing stupid stuff and they end up getting murdered by whoever the villain is, and you know, all those type of things that you would, you know, expect from like classic horror movies. It was, for me, it was a very entertaining, fun story. It fit in that vein of those like, you know, like the Freddy and Jason type stories. And I had fun working on it. Unfortunately, the schedule kind of got a little mixed up because of, various, personal things. So once we got through issue 3 and I started working on issue 4, the book had to kind of take a little bit of a break, and that's when I picked up the Lark's Killer project. I finished off the covers for issues 4 and 5. They had somebody come in to finish up the colors for the next 2 issues. And then probably about 6 months ago, maybe a little bit longer, they released a trade collecting all the issues of the story. I think they were hinting at maybe doing a second arc, but I haven't heard much updates on that lately.
Mm-hmm. So you're also working on Marvel Premiere sketch cards, and yep. from yours truly, I just curious. That's produced by Upper Deck. What are sketch cards per se? Are they gaming cards, or are they more along like trading cards?
They are more along the lines of trading cards. So, okay. If you think of your standard trading card, you go into a store and you buy a pack of cards, and it has, you know, 6, 8, maybe 10 cards in it. So what the sketch cards are like a variant of the trading cards. Each individual sketch card is hand drawn. It's on a little 3x5 card or whatever the dimensions are. I guess it's not 3x5, it's like 2x3, something like that. And so each one gets a original drawing. It's one of one. There's no copies of it. It's not reproduced. You're getting an original piece of art if you find that card hidden in a pack. So each time I get emailed about doing one of these sets, there's usually roughly about 40 cards that I get to draw. You know, I'll be given a list of what I'm not allowed to draw, but it's pretty much open as far as the Marvel Universe is concerned, minus a few characters. I get to have fun and come up with, you know, all sorts of drawings of, you know, I'm basically given the ability to, you know, pick some of my favorite characters, do a nice little original sketch and, you know, markers, inks, colored pencils, that kind of thing. And I send them back, and then, yeah, they get randomly inserted into these the packs of trading cards that you can go and purchase. And, you know, the hope is that, you know, when you buy one of these packs of cards, you're going to open it and get one of these sketch cards from, you know, various artists. I think every time they do a set, they probably have at least 20 different artists, but I know I've seen lists where there's probably 40, 50 different artists contributing sketch cards to these sets. It's that fun collector mentality where you gotta try to, you know, find one of these things as you're buying the cards, going on that hunt, trying to track down your favorite artist or your favorite character or whatnot.
Has anyone through social media taken a picture that they've got one of your cards in a pack?
Yeah, actually, it was the first set that I did. What was that? The 2017 the Marvel Premiere set that I worked on. On that set, I actually did 5x7 cards, so they were much larger, and they were much more rare to occur in these packages because you'd have to buy an entire case of cards. And again, they were randomly inserted, and I did, I want to say, like 15 of them. And there was a gentleman that contacted me through Instagram. He saw that my cards were making their way out in the wild, as he called it. He saw that I did a Moon Knight, and he wanted that Moon Knight really, really bad. And so he tracked it down. They actually have like a couple of websites set up where people will go and trade these cards once they get them, and you know, and or sell them. And yeah, he was able to track down that Moon Knight. And once he got it, yeah, he sent me a picture, and he's like, "Yeah, I got the Moon Knight." And he got one of the other ones that I had done that was another favorite character of his, but that Moon Knight was like his grail piece that he was looking for. So it was pretty fun to find out that somebody was actually able to, you know, they saw that it existed and they were able to finally track it down and get it in their possession.
Well, let's talk about one other project that you got going on here before we talk a little bit about you and your art and whatnot. You're also working for First Comics on a book called Black Flame.
Yeah, it was, that was a 7-issue series I did a couple years ago. So the character initially came out, I believe, in 1984. And it was a story, it was kind of like a horror fantasy story. It was a little mix of the two elements. First Comics wanted to re-release the actual Black Flame story for the first time on its own, because when it first appeared in publication, it was always a backup story in other comic books like Star Slayer and a couple of other issues that first released back in the 80s. It was a short little, like maybe 5 pages here, 8 pages there. It never had its own actual book. So it was coming up on like an anniversary thing when I worked on it, and they wanted to get it re-released. And the editor, it was like one of his favorite stories that he read when he was collecting comics. So he said, you know, I want to get this thing out there. It's kind of my passion project. So he contacted me. And what we did was they took all the original black and white line art that was originally produced in the 80s. They were scanned. They had the old films that they used from back then that the books were produced from. So they collected all the stuff, so they got the entire story. And they had me go back in and kind of almost remaster it in a way where I got to go in and kind of, you know, make sure everything was ready, set for print. But I also got to kind of modernize a little bit of the look with the coloring and whatnot. And I think when it was all said and done, it was like 220 some odd pages that I got to go through and basically kind of, like I said, kind of almost remaster in a way to kind of make it ready for print for like the newer printing capabilities that are out there and available now versus what was available back when I was originally published. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a nice fun project that I got to work on for probably about a year to get all 7 issues of it done and ready to go. As I was working on it, I got the opportunity to work on a couple of the covers where they actually brought back a couple of the original artists that worked on it in the 80s. They did a brand new cover piece. I got to, you know, go in and do some color and paint work to it to finalize the piece for print and whatnot. And yeah, like I said, it was just a neat, fun little project to kind of go in and tackle.
Were you always drawing as a kid? Like, you know, is that what, I guess, what was some of your inspirations when it comes to your art as well?
Yeah, yeah. When, you know, growing up, it was, you know, getting handed a, you know, pack of crayons and a coloring book or a pack of crayons and a pad of paper, something like that. You know, just at an early age, just kind of fell in love with it. I was watching, you know, the typical Saturday morning cartoons at the time, like the first cartoon that I watched, fell in love with, and still love today was Masters of the Universe. You know, huge He-Man fan. So, you know, that was one of the things that caught my interest really early on. And, you know, I was growing up, I guess, at the right time where I was like, you know, when I was a kid, we had, you know, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats. The big things that really caught me were like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. There was a old Incredible Hulk cartoon that was on at the time. And so, you know, I got hooked on those really early, like, you know, I was like somewhere in the realm of like 3 to 5 years old. And then, you know, growing up, you know, we'd go on like a family trip or, you know, before I was in like kindergarten or something like that, you know, I'd, you know, go to work with my mom or my dad or something like that. And it would be like, hey, let's stop off at the corner drugstore or the grocery store and grab a comic book or two to keep me occupied during the day. And, you know, having seen Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends on cartoons, it was, you know, oh, wow, you know, they make books with Spider-Man. So, you know, I picked those up and just, you know, stuck with it all through that and as I was growing up. And then later on, as I got older, you know, there was the X-Men animated series and the Spider-Man animated series that came out. And, you know, again, I just fell in love with all this stuff, stuck with it, and was always drawing. And like when I was in junior high, I started reading Wizard magazine, and they would put out various articles on like how to draw techniques type stuff. Greg Capullo did this this thing in the part of the magazine where it's called Crash Course, and you would do like drawing lessons. So I had that where I was like trying to learn additional stuff to. Just, you know, outside of me just sitting there with a, you know, pencil and a piece of paper, I was, you know, trying to figure out how some of the stuff was done. But I also, reading Wizard magazine, found out how you break into the comic industry. And once I figured that out, I was like, you know, because as a kid growing up and stuff and reading comic books and not really paying a lot of attention to like the credits pages on the stuff, I, you know, in my head, it was like, you know, the people working on Spider-Man were the, you know, we're still like Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. I didn't know other. So you know, in my mind that, you know, reading this stuff, it was, you know, still the same guys had been doing it all this time. I didn't realize that they, you know, hired, you know, different people to come in and do this stuff. So once I discovered that, I was like, oh, you know, this is something I can actually go and pursue as a career. And like the really big thing that struck me was reading an article on Joe Madureira and how he got his start as a Marvel intern at like 16. And then they started giving him, you know, actual jobs on drawing like Marvel Comics Presents and stuff before he jumped on to doing X-Men. And it was just kind of like, wow, he's only a few years older than I am. I want to figure out how I can do this. And so I just, you know, ran with it and just dove in head first and, you know, just started trying to figure out, okay, how can I get better at this? You know, how do I do this stuff that these guys are doing? And, you know, kept at it until I could figure out a way to actually really, you know, get work doing it.
So you mentioned Spider-Man and X-Men. Are they your favorite superheroes or do you have others?
Spider-Man is definitely one of my favorites. That's the one that I've got, you know, plastered all over my studio walls, and, you know, I've got all the other stuff that goes along with it, you know, the action figures and all that. And, you know, it's stuff like that. And like I mentioned earlier, like I'm still a huge He-Man fan. I try to collect some of the newer stuff that comes out as well as the older stuff. Just you know, like a lot of that stuff from being a kid, you know, being a kid of like the 80s and early 90s and stuff of, you know, like the G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats, you know, all that stuff of that generation is just the things that really, you know, still stick with me. And I still, you know, will, you know, find some reason or whatnot to collect stuff as it, you know, comes out and whatnot.
So if I can put you on the spot, because I also same background, love G.I. Joe, He-Man and whatnot. Who was your favorite He-Man figure? Which was your favorite?
Obviously I was big into actually having the original He-Man figure. But you know, as a kid, it was, you know, seeing all the flashy stuff that they would do to all those toys. And I really loved Roboto. Because when he twisted his waist and the visor on his face went up and down and the gears in his chest moved and all that stuff, I was, you know, as a kid, it was like, oh, wow, that's cool. How do they make all this stuff work? And, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, the gimmicky stuff that they did back then, it was like I was the person that it was aimed towards. And, you know, I'd say one of my other favorites was the Cyclone character where you could spin the little wheel on his back and he spun around like a cyclone and whatnot. You know, it was like those kind of things were like my favorites as a kid, and just, you know, having all the, you know, different characters to play with and whatnot. And it was just, like I said, all those gimmicky things were just the fun things to sit there and play with. I look back now and it's like kind of silly. It's like, you know, they made umpteen zillion versions of He-Man with like different armor and stuff just so they could make another He-Man figure to sell. But you know, that was the stuff I loved playing with.
My favorite was Manny Faces.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he had the robot and the demon and then his own face and yeah, you turned his head and he was my favorite.
I saw an awesome cosplay of Manny Faces over the weekend. The guy actually had it set up that the helmet had the three different faces on it.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing! what's your dream project? If you got the opportunity to work on any project, what would it be?
Hands down, it would be a Spider-Man project. It anything. I've had a little taste of it because I got to work on a Spider-Man children's book a few years back. But you know, any project that involved that would be my go-to. Love to work on it. You know, I would jump in and just do whatever the heck I could do to make it happen.
Gotcha. Well, we're starting to get close to our time limit here. Do you have any advice for folks that may want to get in the comic book industry?
My biggest bit of advice would be to practice, you know, whether you want to draw, you want to write, you want to ink, color, whatever. Just practice. Do it daily. And get out there and, you know, make connections, you know, go to conventions, find places online where you can kind of collaborate or, network, get to know people. That's a lot of, how the industry works is knowing people and, you know, getting in and finding ways to do whatever it is you do best. Again, whether it's writing, drawing, whatever, and just, you know, try to be yourself as you're doing it, develop your style, develop your way of doing it, and, you know, find projects that fit and, you know, just go after it, pursue it, find a way to do it.
So how about some upcoming appearances where folks might want to stop by and say hello to you, Sean? Where are you going to be?
Next up, next month, pretty much exactly a month from now, April 27th and 28th, I will be at Gem City Comic Con in Dayton, Ohio. And then after that, I'll be up at Colossal Con in Sandusky, Ohio at the end of May. And then I have a nice long break until San Diego Comic-Con in July.
Okay, you're heading out to the Super Bowl, if you will, exactly. Comic conventions.
Exactly. That's exactly what me and some friends refer to it. It is the Super Bowl. And yep, this will be my fourth year in Artist Alley, I think, at San Diego, fourth or fifth, like kind of losing track. But this is our 10th year going out there. So it's kind of like anniversaries, if you will, and looking forward to doing it. Always have fun out there. It's utter craziness, for like a week long, but it's so much fun.
All right. Well, let's let fans know and listeners know where they can get in touch with you. You have your website, seanforney.com, and that's SEANFORNEY.com for those that need it spelled to them. But can they find you on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter?
Facebook page is Sean Forney Illustration. And then my Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitch, all the other stuff is all at Sean Forney Art.
Well, you made it easy for everybody. There you go.
Yep.
All right. Well, Sean, man, again, congrats on the Kickstarter. And folks, if you want to check it out, again, go over to Kickstarter.com, Scarlet Hunter's Adventures. It has already been funded, but helped Sean reach some cool stretch goals. Hopefully you get quite a few stretch goals hit there in the, because you still have quite a bit of time before it's wrapped up, right?
Yep. The campaign ends the Monday after Gem City Comic Con on April 29th, I believe is the date. And so, yeah, we've got some time to build up these things. So I'd like to see us hit a lot of these so we can get got some amazing, talented friends that have contributed some art to this. So I'd love to see everybody get their hands on it. So, yeah, everybody out there, if you tell your friends, share it all over social media, what have you. Love to see this stuff all come to fruition.
Well, there you go. Well, Sean, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you helping me get the word out on all this stuff. And it was fun chatting here.
Cool. All right. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Sean Forney talking about his book, Scarlet Huntress. And as I mentioned in the intro, the Kickstarter's fully funded, but you can still go over there, you can still donate, you can still become part of the project and help unlock some stretch goals. So go over to Kickstarter, plunk down some cash if you have it, and help out Sean and his talented crew. As you heard, there's a whole host of folks helping him out with that particular project. And I'm glad he came on, and I hope that you enjoyed our conversation. And if you'd like to let me know whether you liked it or you didn't like it, there's a couple different ways you could do that. You could send me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP, and you can leave me a message on the Facebook page of this podcast. That, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. And maybe as you're listening to this episode, you go, I know someone that would like this podcast. Well, tell them to look for it a variety of different places. First off, pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pod Paradise, the Echo Network. Basically, wherever you find podcasts, just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name in there, PVDcast John Orlando. And it's sure to populate. And before I wrap things up, I think I still need to let you know about one more great sponsor. And that great sponsor of this podcast is Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. Now, they don't have Scarlet Huntress yet in their catalog, but give them time. It's always expanding, so you never know. They might, real soon, have your favorite independent comic, whether we're talking about Sean's Scarlet Huntress or maybe Brian Lau's Inferno City Firehouse. You never know. With 180,000 titles to choose from, it's a massive library. But enough of me telling you about their library. What I need to tell you is to get your hands on a free audiobook, all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you all for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.